formation. He's going for the corner. He's got it. Texas is back. The kicker comes through.
We're back. What's up, everybody? Welcome back to another episode of the Fire Tom Herman podcast, your overreactionary Texas Longhorns football fan podcast. My name is Josh. My co-host is Noah, and I'm not really sure what else I'm supposed to say. It's been so long since we recorded one of these episodes. I don't really remember how I did my intros before, but you know, coronavirus is crazy. Completely threw off our schedule. We were going to have episodes for you through spring practice for the spring game, all that good stuff. And obviously none of that happened, so we didn't record. We're not recruiting insiders, so there's not exactly a whole lot for us to talk about when there's no actual football activities happening. So why try and force it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, whenever there's not any football, there's not much point in anybody listening to us. So yeah, exactly. Why try to force it? They don't need to hear our thoughts on, well, I guess everything else.
Yeah, I mean, we joked about doing, like, stupid stuff, talking about movie recommendations, what we were watching on Netflix. Ultimately, just not worth it, and didn't think you guys would have really enjoyed that. But we thought there's enough to have to talk about today, given that we're trying to release this right around the time voluntary workouts start. So it should be about June 15th is when the Big 12 has said that all the schools can start doing voluntary workouts. Texas has started bringing people back onto campus as of June 8th. So we're getting back into things actually happening. Going to start sort of, I believe, with sort of a summer weight conditioning program. And the NCAA is still talking about what practice schedules are going to look like and whatnot. So things are starting to happen. So figured there was something to talk about. But, I mean, we got coronavirus stuff to talk about. The university has been in the news a lot these past couple weeks, just sort of with the position with regard to Black Lives Matter and the protests surrounding that. And then we've got some narratives that we've kind of heard from the media through the offseason. We're going to discuss some of those and discuss whether or not we think they're accurate or they're not accurate, whether it's just sort of all bullshit or what. I think from there, let's just dive on in coronavirus stuff. Obviously, coronavirus talk has taken a backseat these past couple weeks with all the protesting going on around the country, but it is still out there. Things are still happening. A lot of states are starting to open back up. I think at this point, every single state has done something to begin a reopening procedure. Texas has been, for better or worse, near the forefront. States opening up quickly. But the University of Texas has set up a whole bunch of procedures, especially with regard to the football program, for how to come back and try and operate safely given these sort of extreme circumstances.
Yep, it's pretty difficult. It's just all such a tough situation because it's all about trying to balance, right? Like risk versus not. Like there's only so much you can do to prevent spread. I do think that the football team and the athletic department have handled it pretty well. You know, up until this point, their hands have really been pretty tied. Like there was no spring practice. There wasn't even the second half of the spring semester. After spring break, people just didn't come back. So it's not like the team could do anything else. So, yeah, I guess we can go over kind of what exactly the team is doing now that they're actually returning.
Yeah, and this is sort of a quick check. So we're going to go through this pretty quickly. So there's probably some steps here that we're missing. But some of the highlights of this procedure that we're going through is, in addition to getting tested for coronavirus when they show up on campus, players are also going to have to go through daily temperature checks. They're always going to have to park in one specific parking lot on campus. They've got to wear masks when they're walking from that parking lot to the practice facilities. You're not allowed to carpool with anyone that you don't live with. There's only one entrance to the practice field. And rather than set up in the weight room or even the makeshift weight room that they were going to have, given that the renovations, the sort of south end zone project has knocked out access to a lot of the pre-existing weight rooms, they've got sort of three separate weight training areas at Dynas Fields to do all of the entire weight program outdoors, which, gotta say, in the summer heat in Texas has gotta suck.
I was just thinking that has to be so miserable. But it just, so being outdoors reduces risk by so much, though. So I think it's a good move. It's going to be terrible for the players. They're not going to like it. But just purely from a risk management perspective, the more time they spend outdoors, especially whenever they're doing anything that causes heavy breathing, the better, because it's much more difficult to transmit the virus whenever it isn't trapped in an enclosed space.
It makes sense, but yeah, you got to feel for the players. That's going to be hotter than hell. But on a positive note, it should help us ensure that no matter what tomfoolery LSU gets up to with their visitors' locker room due to their imagined slights claiming we turned off their air conditioning when they were here in 2019, we should be more than prepared for that. If you can handle lifting weights and trying to max 100-something degree temperatures in the summer outdoors in Texas, I'm sure you can handle a night game in Louisiana. So hopefully that bodes well for just our overall endurance.
You'd think it has to. Like, there's no way that it can't, right? I think you have to be prepared at that point.
I hope so. But following that, in addition to that, the other procedures, if an athlete does test positive for coronavirus, as you would assume, they're going to be isolated from their teammates, isolated from anyone else. And that's going to continue until they've been symptom-free for at least 72 hours. And that's symptom-free without taking medication. No fever suppressant, no cough suppressant, any of that stuff. Got to be symptom-free for 72 hours, and it has to have been at least 10 days since those symptoms kicked in. And then obviously that becomes... So that puts your time limit on it if someone tests positive but they're asymptomatic, which is one of the reasons why this virus is so difficult to control, because people can be sick and not even realize it. But if someone is sick and they're asymptomatic, at least 10 days in isolation before they're able to rejoin the team, rejoin the program. And I'm sure there's probably something that the coaches can do to sort of give them some guidance while they're basically trapped in their apartment or trapped in their bedroom. But yeah, I think in general, this plan that we've got here is about as safe as you can possibly be without being fully shut down.
I agree. There's always an inherent amount of risk. And whenever you're designing like a process, anytime that they're... Okay, I'm trying to think of the way that I want to word this. Whenever you're creating like a process, if there's any place where it can fail, then that means the entire thing can fall apart. But they've done as the best they can to actually install fail safes with a daily temperature check, wearing masks, with limiting close exposure, like in the car rides and stuff. But then at the end of the day, whenever they're all together working out, the virus can spread. But of course, it can only spread if one of them has the virus. So that's kind of why you're going to see like the self-isolation. And hopefully, as long as none of them actually catch the virus, then they'll be completely fine. So I think a lot of the stuff that happens away from the team and away from the field is really going to be more impactful in terms of the team staying healthy, because that's kind of stuff that we can't regulate. But as far as what the team is able to do within their authority, I think that they've really done a great job.
Yeah, I kind of wonder how much those players are communicating, whether it's with friends or with a girlfriend or whatever, or significant other, whoever that might be, just because, yeah, that's out of the team's control. So the last thing you want is your girlfriend or whatever went to see some of her friends and she came back and unknowingly brought it back to you, and then you unknowingly brought it to the team. And I think that is sort of the risk that everyone's going to be taking, is you can't control everything. So you just got to do the best with what you've got. So it'll be interesting to see how that happens. But just today, Tom Herman, we're recording on Thursday, by the way, Thursday the 11th. So today, in a Zoom call with a bunch of Texas media members, Tom Herman mentioned that the testing alone for all the players that are members of the football team, that alone is going to cost upwards of $250,000 to the athletic program. And then everything for, as far as just the procedures, everything that they've had to change to adapt to this constantly changing situation is going to cost upwards of $1 million. So it's a lot of money, but it's good to see that the university is not afraid to spend that money if it means keeping athletes safe, given everything, you know?
Yeah, I'd agree. They should do everything they can. And it definitely sounds like they are. But, you know, you never know. And, you know, we haven't even started talking about implications for the fall. and for all the non football team members that don't have $250,000 to spend on themselves. But as far as the team goes, you know, I'd give them a solid A for all that they've done.
Yeah, and I guess with regard to the fall, what do you think is going to happen? I mean, I said on a previous podcast that I had serious doubts. I was sort of mentally prepared for no college football, and I'd like to think I'm still sort of there, but it really seems like the winds of change are sort of blowing in the direction of we will have college football in some form, and it sounds like at the moment everything is all systems go for starting on time. So do you think that's going to work out? Do you think we're going to have a pause in the season with another wave? What are your feelings there?
So I actually generally think we will have a season. I think it might be slightly altered. I don't imagine that that's going to be the case in the Big 12. I think the Big 12 is and the SEC are both conservative enough that they're going to go ahead and push on. And there's just so many financial incentives for colleges everywhere. But I think that like the Pac-12 being on the West Coast is going to be a little bit more reserved and a little bit more willing to forgo, especially like non-conference games. Strangely, there aren't really any big college football teams from New York. So unless you want to count Rutgers for the New York market.
The Big Ten does.
Who? Oh, yeah, the Big Ten. Okay.
Yeah, that's yeah, the only reason Rutgers is in the Big right, Ten yeah, is yeah. for that New York market. So
yeah, yeah. But Rutgers aside, there aren't really that many teams in the Northeast. You know, I guess there's Penn State and stuff, but I mean more like that New York, Maine sort of area. So I think that they would also be a little bit more hesitant to reopen. But as far as the schools in the South, I don't know. So a little bit of background. I actually work in healthcare research for listeners out there that don't know. My team just applied for a grant to work on COVID-related research. So I follow all this pretty closely. I don't know what it's going to look like in the fall in terms of fan attendance. I don't know what the guidelines will be. Texas is not looking like we're in very good shape. We're on a pretty poor trend right now. I think that I haven't seen today's data, but the last 3 days before recording have been the three daily highs for new cases. There's also a lot of time, so maybe we can get that reversed and going back in the right direction. But I can't imagine anything more than 50% attendance. That would shock me at this point. And schools aren't going to open up their stands to visiting teams because, of course, that means that you have people from all over the country flooding in, which is going to happen anyways. But so I say that to mean, like, I can't imagine that we go to I think the NCAA or at least conferences will have their own guidelines by the start of the season on like all of our teams are doing 50%, all of our teams are doing 25%, that sort of thing. So that's generally where I'm at, where I think the games will be played. I just don't know what that'll look like for a fan game day experience.
Yeah, and CDC continues maintaining that he's prepared for DKR to be able to support all 92,000 or whatever can fit in with this south end zone construction going. So he's anticipating 100% capacity, but he has brought up a few times that we do have 9 contingency plans. I don't think he's gone into detail as to what exactly those 9 plans look like. But right now, it sounds like all systems are preparing as if everything is going to happen normally, and then they will adjust more or less when their hand is forced. And yeah, I agree. I would be absolutely stunned to see us be 100% full. I know Drew Martin talked on a conference call earlier this week where he said if we had to follow to the letter the sort of 6-foot guideline for social distancing, that we could probably get DKR somewhere between 30 and 35% full. He also said 50% would get us all our season ticket holders in, which I think the math becomes a little strange there because I think if we're talking 50% and 92,000, 46,000, they said last year we had something like 67,000 season ticket holders. And that's not even including whatever student body may be on campus come the fall. So, yeah, a lot of things are changing. Tom Herman said it during that Zoom call today. It's been 87 days, or it's 87 days until we kick off against South Florida at time of recording. And 86 days ago, we were being told not to wear masks because we were so concerned about touching our face and that it might not actually help anything. So, I mean, with any virus like this, there's just so much unknown. We're learning things that we don't even know we don't know at this time. Who knows how this could evolve? Who knows what sort of treatment stuff comes up? What kind of guidelines as far as understanding it, how it spreads? considering the World Health Organization can't even seem to get its own message straight about whether or not asymptomatic people are highly contagious or not. Everyone's still operating, sort of firing from the hip, from the top down with regard to this thing. So it'll be very interesting to see how this all evolves.
Mm-hmm. And so one thing to watch that relates to other current events is how the protests affect everything, because those are happening primarily outdoors. There are large crowds that are kind of varying on size, depending on where you're at and how, like some are much more crowded than others. So that will kind of be a useful data point, I think, for looking at live sporting events. And so far, we're at that two-week mark, a little bit over 2 weeks, which is typically the lag you see on coronavirus case reporting. And so far, definitely mixed results, with some areas seeming to be impacted and some areas seems like it hasn't really had much of an effect.
And that brings us into kind of what we wanted to talk about next. And that is sort of how the university is handling everything with regard to the protests with the Black Lives Matter movement. And I mean, we sort of debated a little bit exactly how we wanted to address this. And I think in general, we're going to try to avoid getting super fired up about this, because ultimately this isn't a politics podcast. Not to say that we're not passionate about these things, but we want to try and focus on what the university is doing rather than our own opinions of what's happening. But to be upfront about that, to feel like we're being as forthcoming with that, both of us do support the movement, the protests. We're both doing what we can to try and understand how we can help. But we wanted to put that out there just to make sure, as we go through discussing this, you understand sort of where we're coming from. While we are going to make an effort to, like I said, not get too fired up, not get carried away with the opinions of it, but just discuss what the university has done and sort of what we like about the response the university has taken. And I think that the first one to talk about here is, I think really just the entire university's response has been, I think, extremely consistent. And they were one of the first, even as an athletics program and as a university, they were one of the first to sort of come out with their statement and sort of be unified in their support for the protests.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I the very first thing that jumps out to me whenever I think of things that I like is Herman's statement, Tom Herman. I think that Tom Herman is at his best whenever he's talking about social issues. And it comes up every once in a while, like with the Zach Smith, Courtney Smith stuff. And sometimes you'll see it in recruiting stories whenever he's talking about how he grew up without a dad and he was raised by a single mother and the effect that had on him. Whenever he lets his humanity show, I actually really like Tom Herman. He just, for some reason, chooses not to do that very often. So I really like the statement that he made supporting his team, you know, talking about how if you're going to support them on the field, you need to support them off the field because they're human beings, which is, you know, that's kind of the point. It's just, I'm trying to think of the best way to say this, but I'll just leave it with, I like the way that Herman has handled it. And I think that he has, like you said, been consistent with everybody else in the athletic department. And they've come out pretty unified. So,
yeah. And I know, especially as Aggies do, there have been sort of a lot of the theories about how, oh, it's just canned PR talk and it's all sort of rehearsed. But I believe it was a Zoom call or a Zoom interview that he did with, oh man, I just blanked on the guy's name, on Fox Sports. Coward, yes. I'm talking with Colin Coward, where he was going, he was just answering questions. He didn't have this all sort of pre-scripted out. I thought he did a very good job articulating how he was feeling, his thoughts on it, how he wanted his football team to react to it, and talked about the meeting that they had, the team and the staff had over Zoom, talking about the role that the football team would have. It all came off very genuine, so I don't think it is just Herman settling into his sometimes robotic coach speak. I think he does truly passionately care about his student athletes and wants them to be active members of the society that we're in, active participants in trying to make the world a better place, whatever form that may take, whether they want to openly protest, how they want to support the movement, if it's something important to them, and not just for this issue, but all issues. that could arise while they're on campus is just encouraging them to use that voice that they have as members of the University of Texas football team to bring attention to things that they feel are unjust or are issues. And regardless of what your feelings are about the protest specifically, I think that's something that's admirable about this program, is that they are able to encourage athletes to not just shut up and dribble, to borrow the phrase from, I think it was one of the correspondents or whatever on Fox News.
Laura Ingraham.
talking about the NBA and LeBron James speaking on social injustice. But to make them and encourage them to be more than just football players, we do have a tendency to kind of forget that these athletes are not just there for football and nothing else. You want them to take advantage of the opportunities that they get through education, through understanding the world around them and finding their voice as a person, because they are more than just a football player. So I'm glad that Herman has helped reinforce that and has given them a platform, even if you might not necessarily like what they have to say. So one of the players who's really sort of taken advantage of that platform, I think, to this point, not taken advantage in the wrong sense, but really tried to reach out and use his voice as much as possible. Brennan Eagles had a pretty strong statement last week, basically saying he was intending to not suit up, not play another down of football while there were all of these problems that he saw in society. I thought that was a pretty powerful sort of statement for him to make, and I'm not sure I necessarily agree with his approach. I think that his protests and his desire to call attention to these things and keep attention on these things would be better served by him continuing to play and use that platform, be more visible that way. But yeah, I think that's very interesting, because this isn't walk-on number 47 who's making this statement. This is arguably our number one receiver going into 2020 saying he's not going to play.
And so Eagles didn't really define the terms of his statement there. He just kind of said, I'm not going to play another snap until X. I can't remember the exact words he used. But, you know, there has been a lot of reform going on. Minneapolis disbanded their police department. Louisville today basically ended no-knock warrants. So there are places you can look all around the country. And I don't know if that satisfies him. Like, I don't think that, of course, that's not the end of it. The end of this is nowhere near. And by this, I mean criminal justice reform and racism, institutional racism. But if that's what Eagles is talking about, then yeah, he'll probably never play another snap again. So I certainly suit he hopes up. I'll also support whatever he chooses to do. And so one kind of final thing to tie in with Herman here, the university, especially the athletic department, really stresses brand. Like, come to UT, build a brand, right? Like Brian Carrington talks about it all the time in recruiting. They make graphics for all of our signees to get so that they have some sort of brand, you know? And so if we're really building it up, and with this talk about players being able to be paid for their likeness, and I think Sam Ellinger had some massive valuation. If you're going to talk about all that and you're going to really hype that up to the crowd, then you have to actually, you know, stand behind it. And this is an opportunity where their players are given the chance to use their brand. And so here you have Eagles taking advantage, like you said. So I think if you're going to make that a major pitch, then you have to stand by it, even if it does do something that isn't in the team's best interest. I mean, Eagles is here to play football. I shouldn't say that. His scholarship was given to him for his ability to play football. He's here to be a student athlete, kind of using air quotes there. But yeah, if you're going to pitch brand, then like you should actually let players use that brand that you've built for them, you know? So yeah, that's kind of my thoughts there.
Yeah, and I think one guy that I also want to bring up, even though he isn't directly representative of the university anymore, but lifetime Longhorn, was on the football team and everything, and is probably our most vocal alum as far as the sports media world is concerned. Emmanuel Acho, who I've sort of been hot and cold on just for his ability to fire off some scalding hot takes often about UT over the past year or two. He's done a really good job sort of using that platform that he's got, that brand that he's built, with his Twitter video series. He's had two episodes so far of uncomfortable conversations with a black man, just with everything that's going on in the world. A lot of times people have questions. People are genuinely don't know what to do. They see all these issues, they see all the protesters, and they just don't understand, not because they are necessarily racist, but because, I mean, people have different experiences, different backgrounds, and it's unfair to just expect that everyone's going to have the right answer or the correct understanding right off the bat. So he's doing a great job, I think, of trying to sort of lower the cost of entry, if you want to look at it with possibly the worst metaphor I could think of in that moment. But he's trying to sort of lower the barrier, bring everyone down, and sort of be able to talk about these things, these hard questions that what can I do, or I, what about all these challenges I've had in my life? I don't see how I'm benefiting what's hurting someone more than it's hurting me. A lot of these questions where sometimes with the way the internet is, people like to villainize not knowing or legitimately not understanding, and just give people an opportunity and to not to use the term safe space, not in a mocking manner, but an area where you can feel like you can ask a question that otherwise you'd feel like is a stupid question and is going to get you into trouble for even asking it. I'd say I'm pretty proud. He had McConaughey on there to sort of pose several of these questions on the second episode. So I think Emmanuel Acho is doing a great job, not only with using his voice, but also sort of leading by example. I think he's one of those guys that Herman or Chris Del Conte or team leaders can point to and say, look, this is someone who's on our side and is using their voice because of what they learned here at the University of Texas, and to emulate that sort of brand, I guess.
Yeah, I haven't seen the video, I'll admit, but I always think it's valuable to, you know, have discussions and get down to a level that everybody will understand. You know, actually, since we've talked some about COVID, as somebody working in healthcare research, I thought that in general, experts did a really poor job of explaining a lot of things about COVID. And so I think that stuff is always important anytime there's any kind of issue that can, you know, just cause societal issues.
Just any sort of widespread confusion. But all of that together is especially reassuring, just given UT's, we'll call it, sketchy history with race relations. Obviously, didn't really integrate super early on. I mean, we're not that far removed from UT finally integrating. There's still statues of Confederate icons on campus. There's currently a movement for the math and physics building, RLM, on campus to be renamed because Robert Lee Moore was a UT mathematics professor, but also extremely well known for being pro-segregation and his treatment of African-American students once UT did integrate. And unfortunately, that's sort of the reality with any Southern school. Really, any school at all is going to have some of these not so positive parts of their history. But any school that's in the South, especially any school that was, or any state that was part of the Confederacy, you're going to have a lot of these touchy areas where decisions were made about naming something after someone or putting up statues that nowadays are a really bad look. So it's good to see the university sort of taking some steps forward in that regard. There's obviously still work to do. There's always going to be work to do with that. But it is good to see us be more proactive in our support for that type of thing, despite those rough patches in the university's history.
Yeah, it's crazy to think that this season is actually going to be only our 50th season since integration, because we didn't actually integrate the football team until 1970, which is, yeah, pretty messed up. So I was definitely a little bit wary whenever I saw UT was making statements, because I was a little bit worried since we haven't always handled this well in the past. But like kind of what you alluded to, at this point, all we can do is do better each time anything like this arises. So I was really happy to see us, in my mind, handle this in a really appropriate way. So, I mean, of course you can't just write off everything that's happened in the past, but you can always do better in the future.
Yeah, you can try and make that legacy more positive. Just because your history is negative does not mean that you can't do better. You can't get better, and you can't build something more positive. The last little thing that I kind of wanted to throw in here, a little bit less serious, but I thought it was interesting. Utah defensive coordinator Morgan Scally was suspended from his position at the University of Utah while they investigate accusations of him being racist, using racist language with regard to recruits and players. I just thought that was interesting because that was a guy that was high on many Texas fans' sort of personal wish lists as far as who was going to replace Todd Orlando before we announced that it was going to be Chris Ash. If anything, I saw that and it was sort of just a, my God, we actually managed to dodge a bullet, because this seemed like the kind of thing, it felt like what would have happened in a quote-unquote normal world is somehow we would have hired this guy and then things would have blown up. So
yeah, that would have been very on brand for Texas. I think Scally was actually my top choice for DC, so you know, thank God that I'm wrong about that. Yeah. And one other random kind of funny thing is, thank God we don't have Drew Meringer on staff anymore. He hasn't done anything, you know, like innocent until proven guilty. I'm not trying to start anything or slander him here, but I would definitely be a lot more nervous about our staff if.
Yeah, based on, I mean, nothing confirmed, but based on what we'd heard about just the relationship between Meringer and his wide receiver room. Yeah, I guess does feel a little bit better knowing that he's not there for that to be a potential powder keg.
Yeah, and also thank God we don't have Dabo.
Yeah, just the...
Thank
I mean,
God we don't win
even if Dabo really is a good person and he's not racist and there's been a lot of accusations thrown his way, at the absolute least, like, Dabo is one of the most tone-deaf, worst at reading the room, worst at putting out a message of any coach in Division I football right now. It's a mess. So I'm at least happy that we are not embroiled in that type of controversy, especially considering, I mean, it's already popular. Any large school, any blue blood has any hiccup like that, it's popular to bash on. And with us, the last decade having gone the way it has, we're already a popular target to make fun of. So I'm glad that we are not the ones in that position where it's easy to just hammer on them for things that we say or do.
Yep, absolutely. For once, we're not the target of negative attention right now, which is, you know, that's a nice, it's a nice break for Texas fans, I think.
Well, let's end that break. Let's talk about some of these off-season narratives that the media has sort of had going. And Tux, our producer, sometimes the co-host as well, he kind of went through and put together some narratives for us to discuss, things that he's seen online as being talked about, what the state of the program might be, what the future could hold for us. And I'm going to just throw these out to you, Noah, and we can talk about them and whether or not we agree or disagree.
Sounds good. I haven't looked at any of these, so I'm going to be going off the top here.
You've been saving yourself for this.
Yeah, no, I'm excited. It's going to get real spicy.
Oh, yeah. So the first one Tux has curated for us is the narrative that Tom Herman needs to head to a Big 12 championship game this season, otherwise he's getting fired. This one, I think, is probably the most popular one, just people trying to gauge how hot the hot seat is for Herman after last year.
Yeah, I mean, if it's a buy or sell sort of thing here, I'd probably sell. And the main reason is just because there's so much uncertainty right now from a financial perspective. I think that if he doesn't make it to a Big 12 championship, probably more likely gone than not. And part of that is, in my mind, I see this team as kind of being boom or bust. I feel like if we aren't in the Big 12 championship game, that means we're probably middle of the pack. Like, I don't know that we'll be third place or just barely missed. But yeah, another season like last year, and I definitely think that he's gone. But, you know, with coronavirus going to drastically reduce revenue in the fall and Shaka also being on the hot seat, you can never say for sure. So that's kind of my asterisk on the entire equation there.
Yeah, I think it really depends on the route that we take if we do miss the Big 12 championship game. If it's because Sam got hurt, or depends, yeah, with Shaka's situation, or just with the absolute craziness that is coronavirus, how much the boosters sort of take pity and go, okay, this season was a weird one. This wasn't normal. We can't necessarily judge your ability to bounce back from a weak season on how you responded in a global pandemic. So I think just saying Big 12 championship game or bust for Herman's hot seat is a little overreactive. But I would say if we don't go to the Big 12 title game, he's basically, at the absolute least, he's got a scorching hot seat going into 2021.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and of course, things like who the other coaches are on the carousel, all those sorts of things always come into play.
Yeah, who's available, who else is firing. But yeah, it's tough to make it that black and white with how much gray area you can immediately see there. The next narrative we got is Texas wide receiver group. Obviously was impacted losing Colin Johnson and Devin Duvernay, two guys who have had a big impact over the past couple of years. The Texas wide receiver group will be okay due to Brendan Eagles breaking out and the combination of Jordan Whittington and Jake Smith in the slot also being elite. Do you think, assuming Brendan Eagles plays, do you think the wide receiver group is going to be okay, or do you think there's going to be more growing pains than we're letting on here?
You know, I will not only call Tux on this one, but I'm actually going to raise the bet here. I bet that our wide receiver group this year is better than last year, because as talented as Devin Duvernay and Colin Johnson were, Colin Johnson has been injured. I don't think we've seen Colin Johnson actually play a game fully healthy since middle of 2018. You know, I think he's had kind of lingering leg issues, even if it's not official since then. So then you're talking about Malcolm Epps being the backup X, and Duvernay was obviously great in the slot. Smith was up and down, but generally really good as the backup there. Eagles was good at the Z. But yeah, I just think we'll be better. I think that there's more pure talent on the field. And once you take into account Colin Johnson's injury issues, I think that we'll be able to have a more consistently good lineup on the field.
Yeah, I would agree. The just raw athleticism, I think this will be the best wide receiver group just in terms of that, probably since the national title berth type of teams. That, I mean, I think overall the general perception is that this is the best collection of talent that Texas has had since Colt McCoy was here. And that's why there's so much riding on this 2020 season for Tom Herman. The next narrative that Tux has here is that Tom Herman is still learning on the job. I know at the absolute least, this was something we had discussed with Will Baser, who is obviously the manager of this Horns Cast Network, and also the host of Fourth and Five, Pretend We're Football, blah, 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 all that other stuff. Even when we hired him, even when we had first hired Tom Herman, Will was quick to sort of point out, hey, he's very new to being a head coach, so we're probably going to have to go through some growing pains as he sort of figures out what it takes to be the head coach. Do you think we're still in that phase? Is Tom Herman still... I mean, obviously everyone's going to be continuously learning throughout their career. I would say no one ever stops learning, but do you think we're still in that point where it's growing pains?
Yeah, you stole my joke there. I was going to say my intellectual answer is that everybody's always learning. But no, in terms of like an actual like answer in a way that matters, no, I don't think he's still learning on the job. He's been here long enough to... I shouldn't say he isn't learning. It's that at this point, it doesn't matter. Like, he doesn't get to use that as an excuse at this point. Because he's now... This is year four, right? Am I crazy?
This is.
Yeah.
Nope.
Okay, so, yeah, year four. At that point, you're dealing mostly with your own players. You should have everybody bought in. You should have the culture that you want. If you don't have those things, that means you did something wrong. But it's... Even if you did something wrong, even if you made a mistake, year four... You should have had time to make the mistake and then fix it, right? And Herman clearly did make a mistake with all of his staff. But yeah, I think that that's kind of why we talk about him using his get out of jail free card over the offseason with having to change both coordinators and all the other positional coaches. So at this point, we're past that. That was kind of a long-winded answer there, but short answer, no.
Makes sense to me. Next one Tux has for us is that the Texas defense will be much improved due to new defensive coordinator Chris Ash simplifying the scheme and just sort of letting them play rather than getting elaborate with safety blitzes from San Marcos.
Sure, I'll buy it. Why not? Plus, part of this is just being technical. Much improved from last year could just be average. So I'll buy that take.
I agree. I think we saw a lot of that, and we've seen it every single new defensive coordinator we've had, when it was Manny Diaz and when it was Vance Bedford, then when it was Todd Orlando. That first year they came in and they simplified things and they let the guys play. And those have been the 3 years, 2011, 2014, 2017, have been the three best defenses we've had basically since Muschamp left us after 2010. So I think, A, we're in sort of that rhythm where it seems like when the new coordinator comes in, everything is much more simple and he lets players just play and attack. I think we'll do things a lot better there. And I think simplifying things will also help guys like Joseph Osai, who is clearly an elite pass rusher who was being misused in a defense where we were struggling to get consistent quarterback pressure last year. I mean, just that alone, I think if Todd Orlando had pulled his head out of his ass enough to know Osai needs to be attacking the quarterback at least 75-80% of his snaps on the field, and otherwise anything else is just some window dressing to confuse the quarterback a little bit, I think that would have had a huge impact. And I think all those growing pains that we went with a young secondary last season, I think this is where it pays off in spades, is you have guys who went through this difficult season, and they're going to be able to just pin their ears back and go for it this year. So I think things are going to be helped out a lot in that regard.
And we've got all the speed in the world, all the athleticism in the world on that defense to take advantage, you know, a simple scheme and just out-talent people.
Yeah, I mean, there's on our schedule for sure, there's really only probably two offenses on the schedule as you look at it right now where we don't just immediately aren't just better athletically at every single position and should be able to just sit there and straight up out-talent them, and that's going to be Oklahoma and LSU. Otherwise, I mean, that even if you lose those two games, you say 10-2 for the rest of them, just based on the defense taking that step forward, feels like it's not that unreasonable of a request, but we'll see what happens. Got to play the season before we find
that
out for sure.
That's a pretty dangerous amount of Kool-Aid you got there.
That could be. Just we got to see how this takes, given all the weirdness, how that scheme, and I'm hoping that that's something that's going to help is, yeah, we didn't get a spring practice to install this scheme, but if things really are just simpler, I mean, we saw, like, for the Alamo Bowl against Utah, we simplified the defense because Craig Nivar was calling it. Trent didn't do anything fancy. Tom Herman said we practiced half as much as we were allowed to, and we only had half a coaching staff for it. And you saw how much more effective that defense was against a Utah team that, sure, they weren't an elite offense, but they were a very good offense, and we completely stymied them. So I've seen enough from this defense with the amount of starters that are returning to believe that a simplification is not a hard install and will be effective this year.
Yeah.
All right, the last...
Good point about the bowl game.
The last narrative we've got here, Stan Drayton was brought on originally because we thought he was an elite coach and especially an elite recruiter given his time at Ohio State and his time at Florida. However, during his time at Texas, he hasn't really lived up to that sort of elite expectation. We thought he was going to be sort of a five-star whisperer. So far, the only five-star that he's really reeled in has been Bijan Robinson, and that was a struggle to hold on to. So the narrative here, Stan Drayton is just a decent recruiter. He is not as elite as his history would have led us to believe.
I mean, yeah. Yeah, I think that's pretty much how things
have played
out. All right.
Well, that says it all, I guess.
Yeah.
Yes.
I don't think there's much else to... There's no real way to contest that one, I don't think.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard. I mean, I guess you could say for the year that we pulled in Keontae Ingram, he did everything he could because Ingram was the best back in an otherwise overall down year. But given last year's in-state class for Texas was really good, you would have thought things wouldn't have been fighting tooth and nail to get a guy from out of state in order to pick someone up. So, yeah, I mean, I think that about says it all. Yeah, he's just decent. He's not elite, but we'll see.
So before we wrap up here, I've got a hot take for you, Josh. Texas is better off not having had a spring practice this year. Now, the reason that I believe that is I alluded to it earlier a little bit, talking about Colin Johnson's injury issues. But I think that our coaching staff has a tendency to really push guys to play and practice through injury, and they haven't had a break to fully rest up in several years now. And I think that that's why you see like our defensive backs consistently just get decimated by injuries over the course of a season. Certain guys like Sam and Colin have always had something lingering, you know. So I think that having the time off to just work out on their own is actually going to be beneficial, even though we have two new coordinators and are installing a new system. I think it's just going to be nice for the team to actually be at 100% going into summer and fall workouts.
I mean, I guess until you explained it, I was going to say that doesn't make any sense to me. Like you said, two new coordinators. Admittedly, with Mike Yurcich, that situation is theoretically going to be same system, maybe a few different tendency changes, so you don't really have to relearn a whole lot. You just got to know what he wants to do. If he wants to go downfield more or whatever. And I feel like that's a pretty easy, quote-unquote, install. And we just talked about Chris Ash simplifying the defense. Sort of we think that might be an easy turnaround. I think I would have liked to see spring practice to ensure that those things are true. But I can definitely appreciate the perspective that giving the guys time to really rest up and heal up is possibly better, just given that we do think that this transition is going to make things easier rather than more difficult for the players that we currently have. So I guess that strikes me, that definitely strikes me as an extremely hot take right off the bat. But
yeah, and of course, I mean, it doesn't help that literally just a couple of hours before we recorded, BJ Foster apparently broke his hand by punching his car. I guess players are still capable of injuring themselves without a football staff there pushing them.
So. Yeah. I just don't... It, especially with BJ Foster, a guy who, when he's healthy, I feel like can be a really good player. But we saw last year, a lot of times playing hurt seemed to really hurt him. So something like that happening, especially with the story of his car was hit in the parking lot and he got mad and punched his own car or something because the person didn't leave a note when they hit his car. I don't know. I guess I'm a little skeptical of that story right off the bat. I'm not sure how true it is. On one hand, it seems like something that would happen to us. But on the other hand, I'm not sure how much of that is just sort of a nice story to clean up the real story. But regardless, yeah, I don't know. Maybe our players, yeah, maybe they're just good at getting themselves hurt. And it doesn't take Tom Herman having physical practice sessions for that to sort of rear its ugly head there.
Yeah, and hey, let's just, you know, no torn ACLs from hoverboards for all the Texas baseball fans out there. I guess that as long as we're not doing that, it could always be worse, you know.
Definitely. Well, that's it for this episode of the Fire Tom Herman podcast. Thank you all for listening and sticking with us through this tumultuous period, not just relative to college football or even to just the Texas program, but across the entire country. If things do proceed according to schedule, you're probably going to hear from us again in July. And if not in July, definitely by the time fall practice is kind of kicking off. But in the meantime, stay safe, and we'll see you for the next episode. Hook 'em.